You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jumah Mubarak. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And today, it's Friday, of course, so our very first brunch with Bernie in our new time period, 3 o'clock Eastern time, 6 o'clock, or excuse me, noon Pacific time. And Senator Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom, but we're going to have to rethink the title of the program.
Well, I still like the B with B, you know, the brunch. And it is, you know, it's noon on the West Coast, so that's...
Well, late afternoon snack on the East Coast with Bernie. How's
there that? He is. Sue, who runs our chat room, is doing so from the United Kingdom. She lives outside of London, and she suggested high tea with Bernie, but it just didn't sound quite right. I thought it was very nice, very elegant, but it wouldn't. Americans wouldn't get the joke. So anyway, what's going on in the world?
Regardless of what time it is, there is a heck of a lot of stuff going on in Washington. Mm. Let me just rattle through some of what we've been working on in the last week. Anyone who fills up their gas tank understands that prices are soaring, and they understand that this is not only hurting individual consumers, especially those people in rural states like Vermont who travel long distances to work, but it's hurting the entire recovery effort. For those folks who think that the price of oil is going up because of what we learned in elementary school about supply and demand in capitalist society, it really is not working quite that way. We have more supply right now in the United States than we did 3 years ago when the price of gas was $1.90 a gallon. There's less demand in the United States now than since 1997. And worldwide, the ratio of supply to demand is twice as much supply as demand in the last quarter. Supply is growing a lot faster than demand. So what is the answer? Why are oil prices soaring and having such a negative impact?
Somebody's pulling that gasoline or oil off the market.
Well, here's what we got. I mean, it's really quite amazing. It's apparently not bad enough that in the last 10 years, the large oil companies in this country, ExxonMobil, et cetera, have made $1 trillion in profit. Got that? $1 trillion
trillion?
In profit over the last decade to large oil companies. Wow. What you're now seeing and have increasingly seen in recent years is our good friends on Wall Street who helped cause this terrible recession because of their greed and illegal behavior, they're back at it again. And now what they're doing is speculating very, very heavily in the oil futures market. The reality is that over 80% of the oil futures market is now controlled not by what we call end users, i.e. Airline companies or fuel dealers or trucking companies, the people who actually use oil. That market is now controlled by over 80% by Wall Street speculators led by, we think, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and these guys. And with this huge amount of money coming into the oil futures market with the sole purpose of earning high profits, not to use the product, it has driven up oil prices. Goldman Sachs itself, in an article in Forbes magazine recently, suggested that they thought that that excessive speculation was adding about 56 cents to a gallon of gas. I suspect that that's probably low, but that's what they are saying. Some people, like the St. Louis Fed, are suggesting that it's impacting the price of a barrel of oil by about 20%. No one knows exactly.
So another way to say that would be that the banksters on Wall Street are skimming 60 cents off every gallon of gas you buy and putting it in their pocket.
That's exactly the appropriate way to say it. And that may be higher than that. Now, here's the good news, the bad news, and maybe the good news. The good news is that when Dodd-Frank, the financial reform bill, was passed, what the Congress explicitly stated to an agency called the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is you have to deal with excessive speculation on the oil futures market. You got to deal with that. They were supposed to have done that in January of 2011. We're in March of 2012. They still have not done it. 10 of us met yesterday in Washington to figure out a way to force them to get moving on this. We believe that if you end this excessive speculation, you can drive oil prices down, and that's something that we want to do. So that's an issue out there of huge concern to the American people. Another issue, which you and I have talked about a whole lot, is the need to rebuild America's infrastructure and put people back to work. I'm happy to report that as a member of the Transportation Committee, that this week by a vote of 74 to 22, so it was a fairly bipartisan vote, I think virtually all the Democrats voted for it and many of the Republicans did, we passed a two-year $109 billion transportation bill. The estimate there is that will create about 1 million new decent-paying jobs. To my mind, this is a good step forward. We've got to go a lot further than that. That's actually a modest transportation bill, but given what's going on in Congress right now, it is a step forward. We hope that the House will pass something similar. I don't have to tell anybody who drives that our roads and bridges are in serious disrepair in this country. In the state of Vermont, just for an example, about one-third of our bridges are in need of significant repair, and that's a similar number to our federal aid highways, about a third of them as well. So in Vermont and all over this country, there is a huge amount of work to be done rebuilding roads, bridges, transit. We also need, obviously, rebuild our rail system. We've got our older schools out there that need work, water systems that need repair. So this is a start, a million new jobs. I hope the House will get its act together and for this occasion at least, do something that they rarely do and do the right thing and pass something to help American workers and our infrastructure. So that's some good news. Mm-hmm. We continue to work on an issue that I know is of great interest to many listeners, that is trying to save the post office from draconian cuts out there. I was spending half my life with the Postmaster General and other people. The original proposal called for shutting down 3,700 rural post offices, half of the processing plants in this country, slowing mail delivery service, ending Saturday mail, etc., shrinking the postal service by about 200,000. We're still in the midst of a huge struggle out there, and I don't want to paint a picture that's any rosier than it is. But I will continue to work on that because I think the post office is just enormously important for this country and for rural America especially. So we're engaged on that issue. Hard to say when a bill is going to come up, but it may be sooner than later, maybe within the next couple of weeks. This week, I believe, is Tom, the anniversary of the Fukushima disaster.
Yes.
And there was a hearing on the Environment Committee on which I sit, kind of review where we are in America, given the disaster that took place in Fukushima. As you know, there are about 23 reactors in this country, including one in southern Vermont, which have the same design that Fukushima did. Mm-hmm. So obviously what the committee wants to make sure is that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is doing everything that it can to make certain that something like what happened in Japan never ever happens in the United States. So that was the subject of that discussion. But there's another point that needs to be mentioned. Many of my Republican friends and some Democrats want to build a whole lot of new nuclear power plants. And what I want the American people to understand is when you're talking about the new production of electricity, new generation of electricity, the most expensive way to go is nuclear power. And when you're talking about a major American welfare program, you're also talking about nuclear power. As taxpayers, what we do is put at risk. We are providing major insurance to the nuclear power industry that they cannot get. Wall Street won't give them a whole lot of other subsidies. And I think we should have a serious conversation about the sense of all of that.
Time to end the welfare for the nuclear industry. Sounds great to me. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be picking up your calls for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Brunch with Bernie. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Subscribe to his newsletter. Sign his amendment to the Constitution to roll back Citizens United.
Let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says we believe in social security. We believe in work for the unemployed. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And Dustin in St. Louis, Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, so much admiration for your courage and integrity, sir. I just want to point out that, you know, the right have debased and perverted our civic vernacular so much. I think the biggest victim has been the socialist doctrine. I think it's done that largely through, they discredited through associating with Soviet communism. To me, socialism is basically extending democracy to the economic sphere, the realization that you can't have political democracy without economic equality. Socialism, to me, is synonymous with democracy. But what bothers me the most is the left has yielded. I mean, how can socialism regain its credibility? I believe you're the only senator in the history of the United States who is an admitted socialist.
Could be. But I think, Dustin, I think you make a good point. And I think one of the sad things is that people don't understand what democratic socialism has done in Scandinavia over the years and in many European countries. If you go to Scandinavia and you ask people about whether or not they have health insurance or health care, they look at you like you're crazy because they have had health care as a right for many, many decades. If you ask people there about the high cost of college education, and I just met with some kids from Vermont the other day, and we're talking about college education being $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year in the United States. Most of the European countries, it's either free or at minimal cost. Because those countries have decided that in terms of health care, in terms of education, in terms of retirement benefits, in terms of maternal benefits when you have a baby, that those are certain rights that working people are entitled to, that all people are entitled to, regardless of their income. And I think it's a sad state of affairs that the American media has not covered what goes on in Scandinavia and in Europe to show that, A, of course you can have democracy. Those countries often have higher percentages of people voting than we do in America, and yet you can have a safety net which is so much stronger than exists in this country, which provides opportunity for all of their kids, where the poverty rate in Scandinavia, you have a childhood poverty rate, depending on the country, 3%, 4%, 5%. In this country, it is 22%, and yet we have more people in jail than does China. And there's a relationship, there's a correlation between high childhood poverty and folks ending up in jail. So thank you for your call, Dustin, and I think I certainly agree with you.
Joseph in New York City, listening on WWRL, 1600 AM. Joseph, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, yes, it's Joseph. Hi, Senator. Love you, brother. Listen, I just have a quick question. I received my PhD in 2010, and I refied my consolidating my loans with the government, and I'm essentially at a 6.4 to 6.8% interest rate, and most of my payment, 60% of it goes to the interest and 40% roughly to the principal. I'm wondering, why does Goldman get to borrow money at less than 1% and I'm paying 6.8? I'm essentially doing research for the government, and I'm earning a meager wage, and it's like, why am I paying 6.8? Can't you or somebody introduce a bill to lower that government rate?
Joseph, thanks for the question, and you're right. There is something wrong when, in a horrendous economy, young people graduating college or graduate school are now paying much, much higher interest rates than our other institutions, the banks and others. It is a huge issue, Joseph. It is something that we can and will look into. I can tell you, you're certainly not alone in this. All over my state and all over this country, a whole lot of folks who are graduating from college, getting jobs, if they're lucky, that don't pay a whole lot. If they're not lucky, they have no jobs and are really confronting very, very high loans that they have to pay off. So this is a huge issue, and yes, Joseph, it is something that we can look at.
Kevin in Wilmington, Vermont, watching us on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, this is Kevin Downey, Bernie.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, I try and call you at least once a month. I really enjoy the show. The question now is, there have been many, many, probably scores of technology transfers from American corporations to China in order to do business in China. Is there a record in our government of such technological transfers, and does the government have a say about it? because perhaps they could be national security?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Is this treasonous?
The answer is, as one can imagine, it's a complicated and difficult issue. So the theory, at least, Kevin, is that we should not be trading away technology that can be used for military purposes. That's the theory. In reality, it is pretty hard to determine when you're dealing with very high-tech, sophisticated, complicated technology to say whether it is just going to be used for civilian use or whether it could be transferred to military use. I think, in my view, there is no question but that major corporation after major corporation has bowed to China's demand not only to come to China, to shut down plants in America, throw American workers out on the street, move to China, but as part of that whole process, what China has demanded, they're tough negotiators, and they say, hey, we want to understand the technology because we want to build the most sophisticated type of products in this country as well. And if you want to come here, that's what you're going to have to give us. And many companies are doing that. So theoretically, there should not be military technology for national security purposes. In reality, I suspect that's not necessarily the case.
Strong argument for reviving a national manufacturing policy and trade policy.
It sure is.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting with a guy I think of as America's senator. Of course, the good citizens of Vermont know he's theirs. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for his newsletter, and you can sign his constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop by our live chat room, and you can make your own blogs and post messages on our message board, all kinds of cool stuff. All free over at TomHartman.com, plus our iPad apps.
The people know the Democratic Party is the people's party, and the Republican Party is the party of special interest, and it always has been and always will be.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls at our national town hall meeting. And Dan in Arvada, Colorado, listening on AM 760 in Denver, our Clear Channel station in Denver. You are on the air, Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders and Tom, thank you both for all you do. Senator Sanders, I wonder if when Congress passed the law that wouldn't allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices with the pharmaceutical companies, if they were really airtight about that, could Medicare purchase the drugs from the Veterans Administration instead and just cut the pharmaceutical companies out?
Well, that's an interesting point, Dan. I don't think under the current law that Medicare could do that. But this is an issue that many of us remain absolutely outraged about. What Dan is talking about, in case people don't know it, is when the Medicare Part D prescription drug program was built and created, the Republicans specifically put in it language which said that that Medicare could not negotiate with its huge purchasing capabilities, its huge leverage, could not use that leverage to get affordable prices from the drug companies. They could not negotiate prices with the drug companies so that the drug companies could continue to rip off the government and Medicare. What Dan is also saying, amazingly enough, is that the Veterans Administration and Medicaid do negotiate prices with the drug companies and get the same prescription drug for a lower price. That's how crazy it is. So many of us are doing everything that we can to put Medicare into a position where they can negotiate prices and get lower costs for Medicare. I would point out that the pharmaceutical industry is enormously powerful in this country. And that is the reason why today our people are paying by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Tom, a number of years ago, I took a group of Vermonters over the Canadian border. I'm talking to you about an hour and 15 minutes away from the Canadian border. We took people into Canada to make the point that they could purchase the same exact prescription drugs they are buying in America. And in one case, it was a drug called tamoxifen used for breast cancer. Women bought it for one-tenth the price they were paying in Vermont. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I do. And I remember those bus trips going up there when you were. Right. I lived in Vermont when you were doing that.
So the point is, and a whole lot of people continue to buy their medicine in Canada. But the point that Dan is making is the pharmaceutical industry is very, very powerful. We have the absurd situation with Medicare. We're wasting huge amounts of money. The other thing that I would tell Dan is we're doing a study of the amount of fraud that the pharmaceutical industry is engaged in right now in ripping off the United States government. And it is enormous, involving virtually almost every major drug company in our country. So there's a lot to be talked about in terms of the drug companies, and that's an issue I hope to return to.
Great. Okay. Bruce in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. Senator, I pay Social Security and Medicare taxes on 100% of my income. My question is, why doesn't everybody, including you?
In other words, why is there a cap of, at $106,000?
The answer is, Bruce, I agree with you, and that's why I have introduced legislation to do more or less that. What Bruce is talking about is that right now, if you're making about $110,000 a year, you pay 100% of your Social Security tax. If you're making 10 times that, you're going to pay one-tenth because there is a ceiling on the Social Security tax. One way that we can make sure that Social Security is solvent for the next 75 years is to lift that cap. I believe we could start off at incomes of $250,000 a year, and that's the legislation that I have introduced, Bruce. So that's exactly what I have done. If you want to solve the Social Security problem long-term, lift the cap on Social Security, the income that is taxable for Social Security purposes, you could solve that problem.
Steve in Liberty Hill, Texas. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom, for the opportunity. Senator Sanders, thank you for your service. I would like for you to go into more detail about the Price-Anderson Act and its descendants and, you know, the impact of that
right.
on tax dollars and on the free market system. I'll hang up and appreciate
well, thank you. Steve. I was just raising this issue the other day at a hearing with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Here's the point. You can be in favor of nuclear power. You can be opposed to nuclear power. But what everybody has got to understand is that the nuclear power industry today is one of the great welfare programs in the United States to the tune of tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars. And despite the rhetoric of my Republican friends about getting the government off the backs of the private sector, how often have we heard that one, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
When I asked them if they wanted to get the government off the backs of the nuclear power industry, I didn't hear too many people saying yes. In other words, they want to continue the enormous subsidies and support for that industry. Without those subsidies and support, by the way, nuclear power industry in America would probably collapse in one day. So here's what you got. Price-Anderson is legislation that has been around for a long time. This is what it says. It says that if, God forbid, there was ever a major nuclear disaster in America, what would happen is that the nuclear reactor itself, the company that owned the reactor, would pay a certain amount in terms of liability. Then, after that certain amount, I don't have the number in front of me, the nuclear industry as a whole would pitch in, and I think that takes you, I could be wrong, somewhere around $15, $17 billion. But if you had a nuclear disaster in America, say, that cost $50 billion, and remember that BP itself, the BP disaster in Louisiana, that's over $20 billion.
Yeah.
That's not nuclear.
And Fukushima will be well over $1 trillion.
Well, there you go. So if, God forbid, you ever had a disaster of that kind, after the $15 billion or $17 billion or whatever it is that the industry puts in to liability payments, it's the taxpayers of America who do that. Now, you would say, why doesn't the nuclear industry go to Wall Street? It's an insurance issue. You can go to an insurance company and say, look, I want insurance to make sure that if there is a disaster in America, you guys are going to be paying out. I'm going to pay you. You know what? There is no insurance company in America that would provide that insurance to a nuclear power company. Only the taxpayers of America, the United States government, are doing that. That's number one. But it's not just Price-Anderson and the insurance aspect. There's a new nuclear power plant that's being contemplated to be built in Georgia. Something like $8 billion in loan guarantees. In other words, once again, where is Wall Street? Why aren't the big, you know, financial investment houses putting money into nuclear power?
In other words, they're getting the front end money from the taxpayers, right?
Exactly.
Or the ratepayers.
It's risky. Yeah. So, you know, when you hear people, and then on top of that, what do you do with all of the nuclear waste at the power plants in America? Who's going to do that? Wall Street going to invest in that? I don't think so. So if you look at those three issues as well, and then on top of that, all kinds of money going into research and development for the nuclear industry. So you've got a nuclear industry which is owned by large and powerful and profitable corporations being subsidized in an extraordinary way by the taxpayers of America for a technology which in terms of new electricity generation is the most expensive around. So for all of my good Republican friends who want to get the government out of the private sector, let business do what they want to do, well, let's start off with the nuclear power industry. I don't think you're going to have too many Republican takers on that proposition.
Yeah, that would be surprising. John in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you, Tom. And yes, Mr. Sanders, in response to the end users of raw crude and the speculation, you've almost got two-thirds of the futures contracts being bought by speculators. And I was wondering, maybe if we had a no-buy fuel day or a no-buy fuel week, it would make these contracts come to maturity and they can take delivery of the raw crude. You talked about a litmus test for these speculators, and I was wondering if that's a plausible answer.
Well, it would take that's a very interesting concept, John. I think it would take a hell of a lot of organizing to make that happen. Let them buy nothing, huh? But you know, bottom line, there is something wrong with a system when over 80% of the oil futures market is controlled not by people who actually use oil. But by Wall Street speculators whose only function in life is to make as much money as they can.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We have 20 seconds. Bernie, in 20 seconds, further thoughts on the probability of Congress doing something about that before the election?
We're working as hard as we can. As I mentioned earlier, we had the chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission in an office. We had 10 members of the Senate telling them to get moving. We are working on legislation right now to force them to do the right thing.
Yeah, because it seems like they're just keeping these prices high until the election. It's not a good thing. We'll be back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting with the senator right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And a great news resource, a great newsletter, and also an opportunity to become a political activist by signing up for a constitutional amendment. Go to Sanders.Senate.gov.
Our present emergency and a common sense of decency make it imperative that no new group of war millionaires shall come into being in this nation as a result of the struggles abroad.
Welcome back to the place where, as Bernie says, despair is not an option. Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour, or maybe Lunch with Bernie. I guess we'll have to negotiate that. Diane in Lansing, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. I hear you talk about Lansing all the time.
My hometown. I grew up there, yep.
Yep. My question for Senator Sanders is about Obamacare. I've seen a commercial the other day recently about Pat Boone. He was on saying that we're going to have us all, we're going to lose Medicare, and you're going to have to pay more for Medicare and all this, and I'd love to hear your take on it and set the record straight.
Diane, don't, Pat Boone had a good career as a singer. I don't think he's doing quite as well as a spokesman for right-wing Republicans. You know, there are going to be a lot of commercials out there about Medicare and what healthcare reform did. Probably, among other things, they will not be talking about the fact that the healthcare reform bill is ending the so-called donut hole currently existing in Medicare Part D, so that seniors are not going to have to pay out of their pocket 100% of the cost of prescription drugs when they go above a certain point. The other thing that our right-wing Republicans probably will not be telling us on their commercials is that the legislation that passed the House in terms of Medicare, and this is where they are coming from, led by Congressman Paul Ryan, who's chairman of the Budget Committee there, would basically end Medicare as we know it and convert it into a voucher program. So these people who are so worried about Medicare, what they are supporting is the converting of Medicare into a voucher program, give seniors $8,000 and say, all right, here's $8,000. You have a serious illness. You're dealing with cancer, heart disease. Good luck to you. Go out and find a private insurance company to take care of you. Now, Diane, you tell me what seniors are going to do with $8,000 when they're facing serious illness. So I think what you're going to be seeing, obviously, on 30-second TV commercials coming from super PACs or from right-wing Republicans are some very significant distortions of reality in the area of Medicare.
Lowell in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Lowell, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator and Tom. I see that Republicans use capital gains tax rates as a hammer against Democrats. They say that, you know, lower capital gains rates magically create jobs. Point one, the rate has been low for 12 years and the jobs have not been created. And I have a recommendation on that. Tie the tax rate on capital gains to an inverse ratio of the unemployment rate. So that way it takes that out of their realm of discussion because, you know, they have to agree to that because they say the unemployment rate will magically go down if you cut the rate.
Tom, we're having some very imaginative suggestions coming in from the listeners today.
We
That's
are.
An interesting one.
Taking notes.
Lowell's point. Our Republican friends have for many years what I think the first George Bush referred to as voodoo economics. And here's voodoo economics. Magically, you give tax breaks to the wealthy and large corporations, and they're going to take those tax breaks, and they're going to invest in America, and they're going to create millions of good-paying jobs. And that is certainly what George W. Bush talked about during his 8 years. That's what he did. And the result was that we lost, 500,000 private sector jobs over his 8-year period after all of this wonderful trickle-down economic theory. What is happening when you give tax breaks to the rich, they get richer. When you give tax breaks to large corporations who enjoy zillions of them now, we got many, many large, powerful corporations, profitable corporations, making huge profits, paying nothing in taxes. Can't do much better than that. And what they do, in many instances, is shut down plants in America and they move to China. So I agree with the first George Bush that this trickle-down economic theory is voodoo economics that has nothing to do with reality, and Lowell is exactly right. We have had it in place for the last 12 years. Hasn't created a whole lot of jobs that I can see.
Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. I'd like to suggest that perhaps the people will not allow the nuclear plant outside of Atlanta to be built. And I'm wondering, what would that look like? Because we've seen what it looks like when people interfere with construction of things that they know is going to harm them. And they're, you know, people are getting organized all over the country right now to make a, I suppose you might call it a last stand against the nuclear industry and its subsidies. What does it look like when people hop over the fence and stop the construction there outside of Atlanta?
Well,
what does that look like? Are these people?
Because you raised an issue which the state of Vermont is deeply involved in right now, and that is the relationship between Washington and state government in terms of nuclear power. To my understanding, the law is pretty clear, is that states have the right to determine their own energy future, and that what Washington has the power to do is determine safety, whether or not a nuclear power plant is safety. That's a federal issue, not a state issue. So if you're asking me, and I don't know what the climate is in Georgia regarding this issue, if the people of Georgia were to say, excuse us, we want to move our energy system in a different way, perhaps toward sustainable energy, perhaps toward more emphasis on energy efficiency, and we as a state, and I certainly don't know what the case is in Georgia. Do they have the right to do that? I believe absolutely that they do. And that's an issue that Vermont right now is arguing in the courts. Our state legislature here has said that we do not want to extend the license of a nuclear power plant. We are fighting in the courts to sustain that right.
It's going to be an interesting one to watch. Bernie, we have about a half a minute left here before the end of the show. Final thoughts for the week?
Well, I think we can pick up on Bob's point, and that is, at the end of the day, what will change this country is the grassroots activism of millions and millions of people who are prepared to stand up to the big money interests who have so much power over the economic and political life of this country. So, as you and I always say, despair is not an option. We've got to keep fighting and make sure that our middle class survives.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live on commercial stations from coast to coast, syndicated by Dial Global, on Sirius XM all across America, all across America, on Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on Dish Network and DirecTV via the Free Speech TV Network, as well as about 200 cable affiliates around the country. Congressman Peter Welch is the Democratic representative, U.S. Congressman from the great state of Vermont. We were just talking to the senator from Vermont. Here is the congressman from Vermont. Congressman Welch, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. You have been working on this whole issue of rising gas prices and oil speculation in the House of Representatives. What's going on?
Well, consumers are getting ripped off, largely because Wall Street has rigged the futures market and have been able to pad the price through speculation. And in fact, two studies confirm this. One, the New York Fed just said in the past 10 years about 15% of the price of a gallon of gas is speculation premium. And Goldman Sachs did a study and basically concluded it's like 56 cents on the gallon of gas, or 15 bucks when you fill up your pickup.
And that money goes to the banksters, not to anybody else.
It goes totally to the banksters. And, you know, what it is we have not monitored the Commodity Future Trading Commission or imposed position limits and reforms that allow that futures market that's quite important to be for its intended purpose, namely price stability for, like, airlines that have to buy fuel, fuel dealers that are delivering it to your home, farmers that are going to sell their crops. Instead, it's been flipped so that it serves largely the interest of these speculators. So we should do two things. Number one, we should have the Dodd-Frank reforms so that the Commodity Future Trading Commission can limit the ripoff.
Those have already been passed by Congress, have they not?
And they have been, but they're really being resisted as far as the rules implementation and the funding for CFTC.
Do the rules have to be passed by Congress, or is that an administrative thing in the executive
that's
branch?
Gensler, he's the head of the CFTC, and he is doing a good job, in my view, getting an immense amount of resistance. And where the Republicans have had some success in trying to block it is on funding. They're not funding the CFTC.
So, in other words, Congress, while it doesn't have to write new rules, if the CFTC decides that they want to stop the banksters from jacking up, you know, from making 15 bucks every time you fill up your gas tank, Congress can cut off the funds to the CFTC to prevent them from enforcing those rules, and is doing that.
It has been. It's really cut the CFTC funding, and it applies not just to the futures market, but to all the responsibilities that it has.
Right.
But there's another tool that is short term. But it's important, and that is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
The taxpayers own 800 million barrels of petroleum.
Right.
And in the past, when presidents have released petroleum from that reserve, it has spooked the speculators. It's made them fear that they're actually going to be on the losing side of a bet. Not
didn't President Obama do this a few months ago?
He did it around Libya, and it worked. The price at the pump went down 8% pretty much immediately. And the other day, just yesterday, when President Obama and Prime Minister Cameron were talking and there was speculation in the press that they were together going to announce a release from the reserve, the price of petroleum went down about $3 a barrel just immediately. This is something that has worked to deal with a short-term speculation bubble. Mm. It's a tool that's available. In my view, use it. Use that tool and help the consumer and scare the speculator.
In the meantime, though, we have a Republican-controlled House of Representatives, mostly Tea Party Republicans, who have presented themselves and gotten elected based on presenting themselves as the great fighters for the Constitution and the people, and yet they are allowing the banksters to rob us blind. I don't get is it their philosophy that if government just gets out of the way and, you know, just let banksters do anything they want, that somehow the banksters will suddenly become wonderful, moral people and they'll stop ripping us off, or what? I don't understand.
You know, Tom, it's a very interesting and puzzling question, because really what it is a lot of these folks put ideology ahead of what they know.
Sure.
And they have folks who are getting hammered when they fill up their truck at the pump. Okay, I talked to Republican legislators, and they're complaining about gas prices. Now, they have an easy answer. It's all Obama's fault. You know, there's no analysis to it. But when you say, hey, look, why don't we rein in the speculation? Why don't we give the CFTC authority it needs? Why don't we use this asset we have, this strategic petroleum reserve? Even though they may acknowledge that it'll work, their ideology says let the market do its, quote, magic. And that's what's misplaced. Because when you have a market where there are no rules other than the ones made by, to use your term, the banksters, then the banksters are going to win and Main Street consumers are going to lose.
Right. This is the big, you know, kind of the elephant in the room in conservative philosophy, as they say, we don't think that there should be any rules. We don't think that the government should even be involved in this. And yet at the same time, they love to go to a football game where there are rules, there are referees, and everybody understands that if you took all the referees off the field and you let either team move the goalpost to wherever they wanted, whenever they wanted during the game, it wouldn't be a game worth watching.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's a really radical philosophy because, you know, we can all have arguments about what level of regulation is appropriate, what the rules are that make sense and what don't and should be changed. But the notion, basically, that the winner-take-all or the big banks that have amassed huge, vast amounts of capital and can basically dictate what the rules are, and then you see how that hurts Main Street folks, that makes me wonder, you know, whether they're able to just take into account what reality is. Yeah. The Goldman Sachs situation really is a very good analogy here. You know, we need a financial sector in order for this economy to be successful.
Sure.
But the financial sector should be in service of the productive economy. And banks, traditionally, Main Street banks, they've made their money as their clients have succeeded. Goldman turned that around and made their money at the expense of their clients. That culture has to change, and if we need rules to help change it, we need rules to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yet, again, this brings us back to where we started, I guess. The Tea Party Republicans are and the ideological Republicans who think that, you know, who believe in getting the government out of the way, and the Republicans who are the Mitch McConnell Republicans, the John Boehner Republicans, who are just absolutely committed to seeing the president be a one-term president,
right,
have a combined, you know, one side is doing it out of belief system, the other side is doing it out of cynical politics, but both sides, the consequence of their behavior is that gas prices continue to go up.
That's right, and not necessarily. I mean, some is supply and demand, and there's not a lot we can do about it.
Yeah.
But when you've got the New York, you've got the, I think it was the St. Louis Fed, you've got Goldman Sachs study, 23 to 25% of the price of a gallon of gas in the Goldman study, 15% according to the Fed, is speculation.
Right.
That's something that we not only can do something about, but it's absolutely outrageous that the government that should be representing Main Street folks trying to make a living, pay their bills, we've got an obligation to do something.
Right. And on top of that, as USA Today pointed out in a story at the on the December 31st, last day of last year, the number one manufactured export of the United States is not TVs or cars or clothing or it's gasoline.
That's
we're
right.
exporting more gasoline from this country than any other manufactured product. If we simply stopped exporting it, we'd be so awash in gasoline, it'd probably be a buck and a half a gallon.
Yeah,
so,
beat Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, exactly. So what's it going to take to get these Republicans, your colleagues in the House of Representatives, to consider something here? We've got about 15 seconds left, sir.
It's going to be the people waking up and voting for representatives who are willing to look at facts and not just stick to ideology.
Uh-huh. So elections have consequences, and there's one coming up.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
Congressman Peter Walsh, from the great state of Vermont. Congressman Welch, so great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We will be back here on the Tom Hartman Program. Anything Goes Friday today, 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday. Drop into our live chat room and say hi. I'm going to go there during the break. During the next break, and say hi.
Everyone knows anything goes.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Matt in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom. St. Louis last night was the scene of police brutality on peaceful protesters, unfortunately. We're having the Occupy the Midwest convention this weekend in St. Louis, where 18 different cities have descended on St. Louis. And I have to tell you, unprovoked police brutality. What happened was is occupiers approached a park. They were stopped. They had an intended to camp there overnight. They were stopped by a phalanx of police officers about 60 shoulder to shoulder. A representative with Occupy met with a city official. They discussed the fact that they weren't allowed to camp. And then the occupiers decided to leave the park and cross the street. Once the occupiers turned their back to the police and complied and left, they were grabbed, thrown to the ground, handcuffed, several of them, about two dozen. Some of them who had been handcuffed face down on the ground were beaten. I saw people pepper sprayed. I saw a man tasered twice.
Wow.
All of this was unprovoked.
Was there any national media coverage of this morning? I admit I haven't watched TV today.
In today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch, St. Louis is a one newspaper town. We have the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's sdltoday.com. I don't even think the reporter was on the scene. It was kind of whitewashed, but at the Post-Dispatch website, there is a video that was uploaded to Ustream last night that you can watch at Ustream and link from the Post website that shows the entire thing. It shows the entire scenario play out. I just don't understand why these police officers they were leaving the park.
Yeah.
As soon as the occupiers left the park, they got tackled, they got tased, they got pepper sprayed.
Yeah.
And, it has not been reported. And the Post, they said that someone damaged a police car. I saw no evidence of that. I saw people literally running away from the cops once they saw that the cops were becoming violent.
Yeah.
And the photo that the Post has displayed, it looks like a photo of a cop car from a previous crime scene that has bullet holes in the windshield. I can't prove that, but I was there, and I know that I didn't see anybody approach the police with violence, yet as soon as the occupiers left the scene and complied, that's when the violence started.
I got it, Matt. Matt, I'm sorry that nobody's reporting it. You just did, and to 3.5 million people, and hopefully that'll start some sort of a viral, as you point out, there's a lot of people still in St. Louis for the Occupy the Midwest program, so hopefully the word will get out. Thanks a lot for the call, Matt, and thanks for waking up our listeners to this. David in Hale, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tommy. I had an idea for a new product the Postal Service could offer.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of cross between email and regular mail. My brother lives in California and complains I don't get his email. I said, I only check my email once a month.
Right.
So why couldn't my post office have a printer that he could email my local post office, it'd print it up, fold it, address it, and deliver it to me the next day?
You know, David, you ought to send that suggestion to Bernie Sanders' office, because Bernie is working with the Postmaster General. He as he pointed out today on the show, he's been meeting with these folks almost every day to try to save the post office, to try to do something about this Republican poison pill that was put in 2006, around the same time that they tried to take down Medicare by not letting them negotiate prescription drug prices. They tried to take down the post office, or at least the Postal Workers Union, the largest union in the United States, or the largest, you know, single unionized employer of the post office, take them down by forcing them to fund 75 years worth of health care benefits for their employees who haven't even been born yet. And Bernie's been looking for ideas of things that the post office can do to make a little extra money. And I think that's a great idea, and David, and I would suggest that you call his office and pass it along. And thanks a lot for calling us and sharing that with us. Larry in Nutley, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, first of all, on the Sudanese embassy thing you were talking about, shout out to Congressman McGovern for being arrested there as well.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, he's a bigger star than George Clooney will ever be.
They're both good men.
What I wanted to bring to your attention was, you remember Rick Santorum's statements on rape babies being a gift from God?
Yes.
Well, in El Salvador, a report just came out. This was featured in the newspaper Diario Colatino, that apparently many young women between the ages of 10 and 14 are getting pregnant in El Salvador because they've been raped. And many of them in that country, with a total ban on abortion, are winding up killing themselves.
Yes.
Suicide is on the rise, and in the article, it says, according to information from the health ministry, 50% of maternal deaths in teens are due to suicide and violence.
Wow. Wow. Larry, thanks for sharing that statistic. It's why we need to have a national dialogue, a national debate. You know, Roe v. Wade was a very imperfect judgment, and we need to figure out where are we going to go from here. Mitt, in Clatskanie, Oregon? Clatskanie.
It's Milt and
Clatskanie. Oh, Milt. I'm sorry. Hey, Milt. So we got a minute to the break. A quick one?
A quick one. What happened to fusion reaction?
Well, I think they're still working on it.
I've been listening for 30 years, and last time I heard anything in either print or on television or radio was like 30 years ago.
The problem is containing the reaction. I mean, the closest they've gotten is, you know, electromagnetic fields to contain the reaction. But if those fields collapse, you've got a reaction that's... You've got a China syndrome.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, then it shuts down.
Yes.
Okay,
it
just
cools off.
That's kind of a good thing. Yeah. Milt, I genuinely don't know. I don't pretend to be an expert on nuclear fission or fusion. I know what I hear, and I like you. I have not heard anything about any breakthroughs or advances or commercial uses for fusion. Don't know why.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Anything Goes Friday. Your calls and my news. I got a couple of stories here to share with you right after this break. Stick around.
Speak up. You got to speak up against the madness. You got to speak your mind.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Rob in Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned that you used UPS because UPS has a union. And I felt the same way until I read the Indy Times magazine for February and found that UPS is one of the sponsors of ALEC.
Oh, geez.
The American Legislative Exchange Council.
Yeah. Well, mostly so I use the United States Postal Service. There's a post office in Union Station that I walk by every day, and probably 90% of the stuff we do goes that way. But occasionally I have had to, well, whatever. I didn't know that.
I didn't either until I read this whole list of AT&T, Time Warner, State Farm, Johnson & Johnson.
I'm supporting ALEC every time I use my iPhone.
ExxonMobil, American, yeah. I would also like to suggest that you Google Diane Nash, N-A-S-H.
Okay.
She was an organizer of the sit-ins in Nashville for the lunch counter sit-ins. And her son called you twice, and you didn't recognize her name. And he was suggesting that you might speak with her, and I would certainly like to hear that.
Okay. Well, thank you for the information. I don't recall that, but I'll have to track it down. James in Long Island. Hey, James, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? You know, I just heard Bernie Sanders talking about the proposed $109 billion transportation bill.
Right. We have a $2 trillion deficit in our infrastructure. We've got $2 trillion worth of bridges and roads and water systems and septic systems that are falling apart around us. And Congress is going to pass one half of 1% of what we need. But, you know, it's a start. I mean, you know.
I just want to know, do they have an inspector that goes out there and make sure that these companies or these states who are getting this money to do all that infrastructure?
First of all, there are inspectors within the government that does that. But probably more importantly, I guarantee you, James, if there was pork, if that's your concern, if there was some, you know, if somebody was scamming the system, if somebody was, filching some of that little tiny fragment of what really needs to be spent on our infrastructure, the media would be all over it. They would be all over it. You would have all these guys, consumer watchdog, like consumer alert. I mean, it would be mind-boggling. It's just like, you know, these guys who scream about voter fraud, and I say, name one person who's been arrested in the last 25 years for voting in somebody else's name in order to change an election, for politically motivated voter fraud. Please name one. They can't come up with a single name. All they can come up with is the occasional guy who gets busted for voting illegally because he was a felon in that state and didn't realize that in about half the states in this country, if you're a felon, you lose forever your right to vote, which I think is wrong and doesn't make any sense anyway. Jay in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, Jay, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Thanks. First-time caller.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you're doing this to counter the corporate news that everybody else likes to listen to. I'd like to ask a question. If the Keystone Pipeline was to be built, would it be built above ground or above ground?
Yeah, it's going to be my understanding is that it's mostly above ground. I could be wrong, but I don't, you know,
that's going to be a disaster waiting to happen because there's tornadoes all over that whole area.
I should step back from that because I genuinely don't know. And the next time we get somebody like Bill McKibben, who has been working on this a lot, we should ask him. I know that, you know, I've seen, you know, pictures of some of the parts of the existing Keystone Pipeline that are above ground. But I guess that if you're going to take a picture of a pipeline, you'd find the above ground portions of it. It might be that 80% of it's underground. And if you took a picture of it, it would just look like dirt, you know. So I let me correct myself, Jay, and say that I don't know. And your point is well taken. Not only would it be a terrorist target, which I keep pointing out, but it would also be a tornado target. And that's excellent point. Jay, thank you very much for the call.
I want to ask one other question. Have you ever tried to get President Obama to come on your show for an interview?
I've never tried. I've never reached out to him. He has an open invitation here. We've had people from the White House on. The last time we had somebody from the White House on, I beat him up pretty badly. I don't know how happy they are with me. It would be a great honor. My good friend Joe Madison has interviewed the president and a number of senior officials a number of times, and you can find those interviews over at his website, which I think is joemadison.com. And, time will tell. I think, you know, as we go into the election season, we'll see. Jay, thanks a lot for the call. I was invited, however, this last year to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and watched the president take down Donald Trump. It was the most hilarious thing. And in fact, just before we went in, we were at a Washington Post cocktail party downstairs in this giant ballroom hotel thing. And then we went into the big room with the president, and Donald Trump walked into the room, And I'm standing there in my tuxedo, and Louise, my wife, is with me, and she's like, I've got to take a look. And I'm like, what? And she just kind of pushes her way through the crowd, walks right up to Donald Trump, and she's standing like maybe a foot and a half from him. He's got a couple of big burly guys with him, and he's got his latest wife on his arm. And she takes a really, really close look and then turns around and announces to me rather loudly, it's bad plugs. God bless her. Sam in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Hey, Sam, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom? It's so nice to talk to the man who has all the answers for people who don't.
Well, I don't have all the answers, Sam. I've got a few.
We respect your views.
Thank you.
Well, what I was calling about, Tom, if the Democrats took back the House, and if people don't sleep again and let the Republicans slip back in,
right,
could things be changed that all the Republicans put in place, from beating up on women, from holding back votes, things in that situation?
Yes. There is a tremendous amount of right-wing damage that's been done to this country. We need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts. We need to reinstate Jimmy Carter was the last president to have a national manufacturing policy and a national energy policy. We need to go back to those things. We need to reconsider our trade laws. I mean, there is the last 30 years has been one continuous experiment in what the Europeans refer to as neoliberalism, and what we here might call libertarian economics, or what George Herbert Walker Bush called voodoo economics. And it's been a disaster for everybody except the top 1% who have seen their income go up 275% and seen their wealth explode. The 400 richest people in America now own more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans. And so, yes, I believe that if you had, it's going to take two things. It's going to take a solid majority in the House and Senate of Democrats and a Democrat in the White House, number one, because that every time that we've passed any significant legislation, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, the 40-hour work week, employee health care, you just go on through the list, right? Ending child labor, all these kinds of things. It's always been because of that, because there's a Democratic majority. So it's going to take that, first of all. But secondly, it's going to take an aroused citizenry. It's going to take a lot of us out there speaking out. You know, the Occupy movement is like some one manifestation of this, but there have to be many, many more standing up and saying, no, we're not going to put up with this craziness anymore. So, Sam, thanks a lot for the call. That's my take on what we need to do and where we need to go with it. Cliff in Santa Clarita, California. Hey, Cliff, what's on your mind today?
Hey there, sir. Regarding the Texas school board and their power to choose school books for millions of children around the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've talked about this. They're rewriting history in a way, and they're also omitting history by not teaching labor movement and things like that. And
yep.
The slavery, they're rewriting slavery. I view it as almost a long-term form of brainwashing, because they're disseminating misinformation to miseducate the masses.
And, that's, you know, exactly what it is, and it's what Lewis Powell called for in his infamous 1971 or 73 memo, in which he suggested to the Chamber of Commerce, that, or his friend, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, that the right-wingers in America, the billionaires in America who are right-wingers, organize themselves, make this kind of thing happen, which then led to the creation of the Cato Institute, which the Koch brothers right now are in a major legal battle to take control of, and the Heritage Foundation, which they helped found, and Competitive Enterprise Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, and all these other right-wing think tanks, and ultimately to things like the Fox News and just the whole right-wing infrastructure came about as a consequence of that memo. You can track it right back. Jeff Clements wrote a brilliant book about this. And Corporations Are Not People is the title of the book, I believe.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Can you recall any time in history that this has happened, and like what the long-term consequences of this, you know, their agenda is? And also,
sure,
how do we take this power? How do we take this power away from the Texas school board to do this?
Well, we saw this happen in the late part of the 19th century in the United States. We saw this in the 1880s and 1890s and the early 1900s. And what happened was that the blowback from the populace, in large part because of the Great Depression of 1897, I think it was, there was a massive economic meltdown in the United States. And what that did is it mobilized people. And I think that we're headed for another really, really big meltdown. I'm not at all confident in the stock market. I wouldn't be in it. if I was a stockholding person, and I think that'll wake people
up. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service and continue your calls here on Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman Program. 45 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here. Oh, there I am with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. How about that? Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment. Victoria, what's up?
Well, we'll stay with Afghanistan to start, as a matter of fact, because mm-hmm. we do have some news coming from there. Hamid Karzai, president today, accused the United States of stonewalling the investigation into the killing of the 16 Afghan civilians. He's also suggesting that more than one soldier may have been involved in the massacre. This is after the Somba Palace meeting with the relatives. The relatives maintain that one man could not have done those killings. So he is maintaining that it's just simply not possible for one person to do that. He says he's also at the end of his rope over the issue of civilian casualties in the conflict, and he's not satisfied about this probe. That's going on. Also, the soldier is being flown back to the United States from Kuwait, we believe, where he was flown to Kuwait, and the reports are that he was flown to Kuwait, but the Kuwaitis were not notified that he was going to be taken to a U.S. base there, and they were furious that he was going to Kuwait, because they didn't want him.
Right.
So now he's coming to the U.S., where I believe he's going to Leavenworth. Another story out of Afghanistan, very disturbing story, not only because of itself, but because of its implications coming out of Kabul, which is that women visiting relatives at a notorious men's prison on the edge of Kabul have in recent weeks been subjected to invasive body cavity searches at the orders of the prison's commandant. Now, they've been told that the measures to keep contraband out, but most male visitors get in with just a pat-down, and the prisoners don't even get body cavity searches. But all women get these vaginal searches, and some Afghan officials have objected. The Americans have objected. They've all been rebuffed, and so repeatedly have they been rebuffed that yesterday the Americans cut off all American funding to the prison until they can confirm that these invasive searches have been stopped. So they've already spent $14.2 million on improvements since June 2009, and so they are not spending any more money. But what they're worried about is they don't want to overblow this. Is this symbolic of a blowback of the rights for women? But many people are saying, well, actually, this is symbolic of what's happening to the rights of women in Afghanistan. A couple of other things. Earlier this month, Afghanistan's Ulema Council, which is the highest religious authority, released a code of conduct that suggested it was permissible for a man to beat his wife under certain circumstances, and Hamid Karzai endorsed the code last week.
Well, you know, what Americans don't get is that different countries have different cultures, and if we want to try and run their country and run their culture, well, it's just good luck. The way history shows, the way you bring cultures into the 21st century and empower, you know, and do away with this abuse of women is by empowering and educating girls, basically, young women.
Educating girls.
And you don't do it with wars. You don't do it by bombing people. You don't do it by shooting people. You don't do it with drone strikes. You do it by building schools. And that has been the last priority of ours. And it should, you know, if we had done nothing, if we had taken the $1 trillion roughly that we will have spent in Afghanistan, a country that before we arrived there was the second poorest country in the world with a $2 billion a year gross domestic product. If we had taken, you know, a couple billion dollars a year, the entire GDP of the country, we could have doubled the wealth of everybody in Afghanistan and put all that money into schools for girls. It would be a very different country today.
Don't get me going. It is so frustrating with the education of girls would transform this world. Women don't start wars.
Exactly. Well, except for Maggie Thatcher.
She's the only one, and she was playing in a man's pond.
Yes, you're right.
The Supreme Court ruled today, well, it didn't actually mention it, but it rejected calls to allow TV cameras into its chambers during the arguments over President Obama's health care the week after next. It says it will release same-day audio recordings of the arguments, citing the extraordinary public interest in the case. They normally release audio at the end of the week, but the statement that they released did not mention television cameras.
Now, the Constitution of the United States, Article 3, Section 2, clearly and explicitly says that the Supreme Court shall operate under such regulations as the Congress shall make. Why doesn't Congress simply pass a law saying that the Supreme Court has to allow television cameras just like Congress does?
Well, we've talked about this in the last few weeks, you and I, mm-hmm. and there was a bill, and it went through the Judiciary Committee, as I remember, in the Senate, and then it got bogged down on the floor of both, I think, the House and the Senate, with people punting it around, saying, well, it has to go to leadership, it's going to go to this guy, it's going to go to that guy, and you got the impression from everything that I was reading, I read several pieces on this, that nobody wanted to mess with the justices.
Huh. These guys are so powerful, everybody's afraid of them?
That was the impression I got, that they didn't want to rock the boat because they felt that the majority of the justices were not in favor of this yet. That's my read of it.
Right.
Well,
clearly,
I could be wrong. That's my sense.
Clearly, the majority of the justices are not in favor of it because it hasn't happened.
Right.
But the idea that an elected member of the House or the Senate would be afraid of Antonin Scalia is pretty chilling. You know,
yes.
We'd be afraid of an unelected member of the third branch of government, of the least likely to cause mischief branch of government, to quote Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Number 79.
Oh, you think it's the least likely with Citizens United?
Well, that's what Alexander Hamilton thought. But keep in mind, back then, nobody thought that the Supreme Court would ever strike down laws passed by Congress as being unconstitutional, because that authority is not in the Constitution. They had that battle in the Constitutional Convention in 1787, and the people who wanted the Supreme Court to have the power to strike down laws as unconstitutional lost. It's not in the Constitution. But they do it anyway.
Apparently so.
Yes. Anyhow, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st. Victoria, thank you so much for your report today.
Thank you.
It's always good hearing from you. Have a very great weekend. And we'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. By the way, I misspoke. It's Arizona, not Texas, that wants women. Arizona, Jan Brewer's state. How could you have a state with a female governor who would say, yes, it's a great idea. Let's just say that any woman who wants to get a job has to go to her employer or keep her job and at the same time get birth control covered under her, even if it's not for contraception. Get birth control covered under, or hormonal therapy covered under her health insurance plan, has to hand over her entire life's history of medical records, which presumably would include psychiatric records, to her employer.
So you got, Ralph sitting here with his cigar and his bib overhauls, and he's saying, okay, sweetie, let me see your medical records.
Can you imagine if you were a woman working for Rush Limbaugh? And he's providing you health insurance?
Hey, baby, let me see your health insurance. Let me see your health records.
I can't do a Limbaugh, but. Of course, he'd have to be living in Arizona for that. But, boy, is that strange. EJ in Lapine, Oregon. Hey, EJ, you know something about the XL pipeline that I don't?
Yeah, well, what I've read about it and everything, it will go underground.
Okay.
Things because of landscaping, out of sight, out of mind.
Sure.
So you can push a lot of it through and nobody would understand it. The other thing I'm not sure of, but our the House Speaker, Boehner, stands to make $374,000 on the backside of this if it goes through. And I'm not sure
how's that?
About that. Well, which I would understand that, a little inside trading. If you can get this through on the floor, and hey, here's your little bonus for it.
Yeah, okay. Well, and the big bonus, of course, is that any of the Republicans who are seen as pivotal to this can resign from Congress and get an immediate, you know, $1 million a year or thereabouts as a lobbyist. It's incredible how industry takes care of legislators. Yesterday there was a report, Republic Reports, Lee Fong, the organization that Lee Fong and Zed Jelani are working for now, was talking about 1,400% increase in pay as soon as you leave Congress. You know, the corruption business in this city here in Washington, D.C., is the biggest business. EJ, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the insight. That's awful. Sandra in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Finally got through to you.
Well, and thank you for waiting on hold for an hour. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to specify that if Citizens United can be considered citizens, then I want to see their birth certificates. And another thing is, if they're able to vote, then how can they vote when they're only 2 years old?
Yeah, well, they can't vote. They can only influence elections. But good point. The next time a corporation claims it's a person, I want to see its birth certificate. Somebody called the other day and one of the most common sense comments I've ever heard said, if you can't walk into a booth and pull a lever legally, then you have no right, in other words, you know, a U.S. citizen, then you have no right to be influencing our elections. In other words, a corporation can't walk in the booth and pull the lever. Somebody in some foreign country that wants to try to influence our elections can't do that. And frankly, only people should be able to do it. Sandra, thank you very much for the call. Well said. Karen in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Karen, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to talk to you today a little bit about Unity and Occupy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in the mood?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Have you heard that little rumor going around that at Occupy across the nation there's some discontent going on, some challenging discontent?
Oh, it's not just a rumor. It's the normal and natural phase that every organization goes through and every relationship goes through. You know, you have the honeymoon, and then all of a sudden, you know, where everybody says, oh, we're all identical, we're perfect, you know, together, right? You know, and
absolutely.
And couples, you know, or organizations or groups of people, they only look at what they all agree on. And then after they live together for a while, they start noticing, hey, wait a minute, I've got some disagreements here. And then pretty soon all that breaks out into the open and everybody gets out what they disagree on. And that's a healthy process. And then if after that has happened, the group still stays together or the couple still stays together, the third stage in a relationship is called real intimacy. That's real love, not honeymoon love. And in a group, that's real organizational functionality, and that's when the organization either dies or survives. And if it survives, now it's strong, now it has a breadth of understanding, now it has wisdom instead of just intelligence, and then it goes on to the next stage in a marriage of, you know, building a relationship and building a life together, and in an institution or an organization deciding how you're going to go about doing things and getting them done. And so I think it's a great thing that the Occupy movement has got a lot of internal strife right now, because in many places, because what this indicates is that it is maturing and growing into what may well be a real force in American politics for the next, you know, half a century or more.
We can hope. And I'm hoping that we take the opportunity in the struggle to open up and talk once again about what we were talking about in the beginning, which was the American Spring.
Yeah, yeah, the American Spring
and little spot.
Inequality in America.
You bet. And do it together with the same thing we started with, no leaders, that everybody's a leader when they come together and they talk about the issues that are in their heart that they know about.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to share with you, there's a spot out there called America's-spring.us,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really neat little environment where some of this discontentment is actually being talked about, and they're getting through it or providing a place to get through it and start talking about this action we need in the spring together.
That's good. That's great. In fact, that's not just good. That's necessary and great. Karen, thanks so much for the heads up, and thanks for passing out the URL. I appreciate it. Henry in Gresham, Oregon. Hey, Henry, what's up? Thanks for listening to KPOJ.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
Usually you're pretty even-handed, and but in this case, this is regarding the CFTC and the and oil as a commodity.
Right.
But unfortunately, in this case, I think you drank the establishment left Kool-Aid. The president has still, until now, given the banksters a pass. I think you would agree with that. And unless he gets pressure from the left as much as the right, he's not really going to take action. And what I'm talking about specifically is in June 25 of 2008, Nancy Pelosi wrote a letter to Bush saying that, and I quote from the letter, given the extraordinary impact on the American economy and consumers, I call on you immediately to direct the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, to use existing emergency authority under Section 8, Subsection 9 of the Commodity Exchange Act to restore order to the market to ensure that prices are fair.
Right.
And so none of this is being mentioned. I think the president has to get the pressure from the left as much as he's getting it from the right, or else he will not act. And
well, one of the problems is that, Henry, is that the vast majority of Americans don't even know what the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is. They don't know it exists. They don't know that the Republicans in Congress are underfunding it. They don't know that the Republicans in Congress are trying to do away with it by blowing up Dodd-Frank, that all of the Republicans running for president have said that they're going to do away with it and blow up Dodd-Frank. They don't know any of that. They also don't know that I think you're right. We need to be speaking up more and more loudly and all of us and you know, let the White House know. But it's going to take.
I think the president it would be something that he could almost guarantee. It would be like his greatest populist act ever if he did it sometime in the summer, maybe right before the summer, before the price is going to go off the scale. He may well.
You know, 3-4 months ago when they started passing these voter ID laws, I said, you know, the attorney general came out and said, well, maybe these things are violations of the Civil Rights Act. And I speculated on air that I'll bet that over the spring and summer, you're going to see him start coming down on individual states. They dropped the axe on Texas last week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So it may well be that you're going to see that happen over the next few months, step by step here. This guy's very methodical and gets things done, so I'm not writing him off.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. John, you wanted to correct one of my historical references regarding the Middle East yesterday.
It was just the prime minister's name was Mossadegh.
I was saying Gospodek. It's Mossadegh.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And but the significant thing about that was that was our first successful toppling of a democratically elected leader. And as a consequence, we're dealing with all of these problems now.
Yep.
I think it can be directly traced to that.
It wasn't our first. Our first was helping overthrow the democratically elected government of Haiti in the 1780s.
Yeah.
Haiti was a democracy before we were, and we helped put an end to it.
And then in Chile, you know, they had 160 years of democracy, no coup d'etats, no military juntas running the country, and yet we had a hand in that.
Yep.
Plus, we've also had a hand in allowing a murder on this soil of the Chilean ambassador and an American citizen, of which I think that the case has finally been resolved in favor of damages for the family.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of thing is just reprehensible. That is done in our name, and Americans need to know about it. And I think that it is because it's done through Central Intelligence Agency. We have no access to what they do. We have no information. And then private contractors have been involved in this for a very long time. I'm sorry I'm getting a little heated, but it's just a terrible thing. But if your listeners would read the confessions of an economic hitman, they will see how their tax dollars are spent like water, undermining popularly elected governments, undermining the very institution that we believe in and that we believe is universally good for the whole world.
Right, and many times, as John Perkins wrote in that book, being done on behalf of international banksters.
Right, and I wanted to say one more thing in regards to Roosevelt and war profiting. The Bush family handily made quite a bit of money off of the Nazi war machine until he passed passed his prohibition against making profits off of it.
Right.
I think up until like
Prescott Bush's Brown Brothers was making money off the Brown Brothers Harriman, I think it's called now, or was after that, was making money off Hitler before we entered the war.
Right.
And after. And he was censured by Congress for doing, and, you know, Prescott Bush, Bush's grandfather, George Bush's grandfather.
Right. He was involved in that also. I mean, these people should be held accountable for these kinds of things, and it should be known across the board. This should be taught in school. The corruption that we have, fostered throughout the world so that people don't think that we're, lily white, that our hands aren't dirty. We helped the British undo Mossadegh because we had a hand, we wanted some of the oil too, but actually they benefited mostly off of that.
Yep.
And we're following them, throughout, the last 50 years, following a tottering empire, doing the same kinds of things that, in the War of Independence, fought against. So we need to live up to our own values. I don't know how much more I could say about it.
I think you just said it, and you said it very elegantly, and I appreciate, John, your calling and saying it. It was perfect. It was just perfect. Alan in Chicago, Illinois, listening on WCPT, AM 820. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. Happy Friday.
TGIF to you.
My question is, are you aware of this, that the United States is getting compensated even one thin dime from all the oil that was coming out of Iraq since we went over there and got rid of the bad guys and spent a pretty penny doing it, and then all this rebuilding? Someone's getting rich off of that Iraqi oil. And
the very first contract, to sell or lease Iraqi lands to a foreign oil company, and the first oil company to come in and take some of that oil was Chinese. The second, I believe, was Shell Oil. If you go back all the way back to 2001, to March of 2001, 6 months, if I'm doing my math right, before 9/11, and Dick Cheney had been given two jobs by George W. Bush. One was to be in charge of Homeland Security, basically to stop bin Laden from attacking the United States. That Intelligence and Homeland Security Committee never met until September of 2001. So Dick Cheney just said, don't need to do that. And the second was to have an energy task force. The energy task force met in March. There was a lawsuit by Larry Klayman of Judicial Works, which is a right-wing group down in Florida, and he sued Dick Cheney's Energy Committee and said, I want to see the paperwork, and actually got this stuff released under a Freedom of Information Act filing in 2003, I believe it was, or 2004. We had Larry on this show when he finally got this stuff out. And I've seen these maps. You can find them over at freedomworks.org. You can find them on their website, although you have to dig really hard to find them. But you can Google them. They're not hard to find. The maps that came out of Dick Cheney's hearings are Dick Cheney's private secret meetings where nobody was allowed in except the oil industry and Dick Cheney and a few people from the White House. And what they did 6 months before 9/11 is they divided up the oil fields of Iraq, and they divided up the undrilled, untested areas where they believed that there was an enormous amount of oil. They divided them up, and there was almost 100 individual fields that they identified. And then they listed the country and the company that they were going to sell them to after they had taken control of the oil fields in Iraq. And you see China, Argentina, Chile, Venezuela, France, Britain. There were countries I didn't even know they had oil companies that Dick Cheney was planning on selling off oil concessions to in Iraq. It was mind-boggling. And, of course, ExxonMobil was one of them, the largest American company. And, you know, this is not something that just accidentally happened last week. This is something Dick Cheney put together in March of 2001. And you're right. Our soldiers have died for this. We have paid for this. And we're not seeing a penny out of it. And it's a crime. Thank you, Alan.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly. And more of your calls and anything goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very pantagruelously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good. Fox News lack of effect. Looks like conservative spin machine Fox News is starting to lose its edge. Fox News recently conducted a poll asking registered voters whether they believe the claim that President Obama purposely wants higher gas prices. The answers they got must have been pretty upsetting. 50% of those polled said the price spikes make President Obama unhappy, while only 31% said they make him happy. The poll also found that nearly 60% of Americans think the economy has turned around. So despite the flow of misinformation coming from GOP TV on an hourly basis, it seems most of the American public isn't having it. The bad. Texas Senate candidate Ted Cruz. We all know some politicians waste their times on some pretty silly ideas, but Cruz's new conspiracy theory takes the cake. According to Cruz, George Soros has partnered with the United Nations to come to American cities and take away our right to play golf. That's right. According to Cruz, this sinister plot dates back to 1992 when the UN adopted a plan to, quote, achieve a more efficient and equitable world economy. This somehow means destroying American golf courses in Cruz's mind. And apparently Soros is bankrolling the entire operation. No word on whether or not Cruz also believes that the Constitution gives Americans the right to play golf on Sundays. And the very, very ugly Senator James Inhofe. Big oil front man and climate-denying King Inhofe was interviewed last night on the Rachel Maddow Show. When confronted with scientifically proven facts on climate change, Inhofe replied, "It's not true." When faced with the statistic that 97% of scientists believe climate change is real, Inhofe said, "They were wrong." And the real gem of the interview, Inhofe even denied the existence of big oil, saying, "Because we hear things about big oil, but what you hear is not all that big of oil." End of quote. The fact is, big oil runs this country, and climate change is very real and here to stay. Denying the existence of both of these critical issues does nothing to help improve this country or this planet, and it's very, very ugly. Boy, is that ugly. That's amazingly ugly. Adam in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hey, Adam, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question as far as the patent law. I had an idea, and I wanted to run it past you.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday on your show, you had the lawyer on that was talking about how we need these patents to be 17, 20 years long because they need to recoup their investments. You know, and right. If you didn't, then they wouldn't.
Right.
Well, if that argument is true, then it should hold true on the flip side. I'd say that all of the patents that were founded based on using, you know, the taxpayers' funds, either through grants or anything else, and the government, the taxpayers should have a stake in those patents, too, where they should be able to basically recoup their investment.
Yeah.
And that should hold true with those patents until they do expire, where if they were to transfer between companies, that's fine, but 1% of the profits that are made off of that, whatever, that would still hold true that the American people would be able to recoup their investment.
Yeah, 1%. Why not just say that the entire amount of the U.S. taxpayer investment gets paid back to the U.S. taxpayer before the corporation starts skimming the profits off?
Hey, I'll go for that, too.
Yeah, yeah. This is, you know, it's a variation on the suggestion I had yesterday that only people could have patents and corporations can't. But I think that the easy answer to this is just to go back to what Thomas Jefferson suggested, which is that you can have a patent for 3 years. And after that, you can still make the product and you can still make money. I mean, there's no shortage of companies in America that are making money off products that are way out of patent. And right. and they still make them, and people still buy them. I mean, how long has it been since somebody patented a T-shirt, right? I mean, we're still making them, right? You know, blue jeans, whatever. It's like, you know, come on. It's possible to make money selling things, and you know, with or without a patent. It's just what a patent does is it gives you a certain government welfare protection. And then you look at the trademark laws. This is where it's getting insane. On July 12th, AT&T and Verizon and Comcast, a bunch of the big internet service providers, ISPs, are going to, actually they're doing it right now. They're looking at every single word that goes through your internet browser, everything you're sending in an email, every picture that comes down, and if they spot anything that's copyrighted, they put you on a list. And on July 12th, they're going to take down hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of people all across the United States. They're going to basically take their internet down to a snail's speed and say the only way that you can get your internet back is by agreeing that you realize that every single violation could be a $150,000 fine and that you have to go to classes and, you know, all this bizarre stuff. And this is also that the motion picture industry and the record industry can, you know, keep up their record profits. Their executives are making more money than they've ever made in the history of the world, and they're doing this. Adam, thank you for the call. I mean, let me extend this insanity. There was a TED Talk about this today that's going viral right now, where the guy pointed out that, you know, when this $150,000 per violation amount was passed by Congress, you had the Sony Walkman. You had basically a cassette player. And so, you know, one bootlegged cassette could have maybe 10 songs on it, so it'd have $1.5 million worth of stolen intellectual property on a Walkman. Well, now you've got an iPod that can hold over $1 billion worth of stolen intellectual property in terms of the fines. Tell me that makes sense, that those fines are appropriate and proportionate. This is insane. And these big companies are coming after you. Right? They are monitoring your internet activity to see if you are sharing, sending, or receiving copyright information that you don't have the right to. Do you ever forward an article? You thought, hey, this is a really cool article. I'm going to send this to grandma. Bang! No more internet for you, buddy. I mean, this is incredible. JP in Detroit, listening on XM Radio. Hey, JP, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm waiting to see when you guys are going to figure out that government is the mechanism by which these corrupt and greedy corporations and special interests gain power.
This is a government regulation, the patent laws, that is a form of corporate welfare that I think needs to be radically scaled back. I'm all in favor of it. Let's cut the copyright back to 10 years and the patents back to 3 years, except for pharmaceuticals, which take 8 years to bring to market. So we'll make the pharmaceuticals 10 years as well. But the 17 and a half year and 20 years for a patent, that's insane.
Well, I'm talking about government across the entire economy. Politicians are only interested in power. They use
that's not true.
Our ills as an excuse.
JP, if you believe that's true, you've never met a politician.
Politicians are only interested in, they're political animals. They're not economic animals. They don't deal in economic reality. If you believe that
JP, people who say things like that are projecting themselves. I'm telling you, if you were to come to this town and meet some of the politicians who live here, what you would discover is that they are, to a large extent, a cross-section of America. You've got some people who are in it for the religion. You got some people who are in it for the public good. You got some people who are in it to hustle money. You got some people in it who are in it because they're ego freaks. You got some people who are in it for the money. And, you know, there's probably a higher proportion of dysfunctional people among the politicians than there is the public at large. But anytime somebody says all politicians are in it for the power, all politicians are in it for the money, come on. It's, you know, join the reality-based world here. No offense, but it's cheap rhetoric. This is the rhetoric of the right. This cheap rhetoric. Oh, all these politicians are all bums. Therefore, we should turn our country over to United Healthcare with regard to healthcare, over to Boeing with regard to our military or Blackwater. Therefore, we should turn our air over to the Koch brothers and just let them blow all the stuff out of their smokestacks and their refineries that they want. We should turn our water supply over to Dow Chemical and let them pollute the land with whatever god-awful chemicals they've come up with during the last week to kill bugs. We should turn our, you know, I mean, it's just on and on and on. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not ready to do that. You know, Americans have fought and died for over 200 years to have a government that actually stands for the general welfare, to quote the Constitution in two different places, of the United States. Jim in Albany, New York. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, how you doing, Tom? Hey, I've got a question regarding the pipeline. It seems to me that everybody's making the point that price of gas should go down if we only can get this gas from Canada into the United States. My question is, why hasn't it reduced the price of gas in Canada? I'm looking on the Internet today. Canada's gas today is $4.90 a gallon,
right,
equivalent to American.
Yeah.
They haven't had a...
It's a North American gasoline market. We actually have a Keystone XL pipeline. It is bringing Alberta tar sands oil into the United States. It goes all the way down to near St. Louis, Missouri. There's a bunch of refineries there. Then it takes an east turn, a left turn toward the east, and it goes all the way to Indiana, and there's refineries there. And those refineries supply gasoline to the Midwest. The one they want to build, as Harry Reid came right out and said in front of God and everybody last week, and nobody contradicted him. Not one oil executive came out and said he's wrong. Not one Republican member of Congress came out and said Harry Reid is wrong. Harry Reid came right out and said, this thing is for export. All of this oil that's going to cross the entire North American continent, all the way across the United States down to the Gulf Coast, is doing so that they can refine it in Texas, so we get all the poisons and all the cancers from the refinery process, and then they can export that gasoline to Mexico, to Brazil, to the United Kingdom, and to China. In fact, they're enlarging the Panama Canal right now for supercontainers to carry that gasoline to Asia. And that's what's going on, and it's got nothing to do with gas prices. In fact, according to TransCanada itself, in their own public filings, TransCanada is the company that wants to build a pipeline. They're willing to put $8 billion on the table to build the pipeline. According to their own public filings, when they finish this pipeline, because they're exporting so much gasoline, it'll raise gas prices in the United States by at least 20 cents a gallon.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And yet somehow Fox News and all the guys on the right think this is just the best thing since sliced bread. Could it have something to do with the fact that the oil industry is sprinkling water like fairy dust on these people? I mean money, excuse me.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our phone screeners, Paul Edney and Julie Lulli, our writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum at WYD, to everyone at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dial Global on commercial stations from coast to coast in the United States, Pacifica Radio, which syndicates us across North America, Europe, and Africa, to the Free Speech Radio TV Network on, to Free Speech TV, Network on Dish Network, DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and others around the country. To Don Rojas, Dennis Trudeau, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on our show, The Big Picture. To our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt. To the folks in our chat room. To Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and all the great people at the Talk Radio News Service. To Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support. To our affiliates, our sponsors, and most importantly, to you for supporting our program. We wouldn't be here without you. Thank you. And thank you for going to bat with us when it really counts. It's much appreciated. Greg in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Say, if the left really thinks about this and President Obama really argues this point, he's not going to have any problem being reelected. And here's my point I want to make. I have continued to listen to the right say how bad of a job this president has done. He's leading us down the wrong path, blah, blah, blah. Well, if we look at the stock market today, the Dow Jones Industrial sits at 13,250 roughly points.
Right.
S&P 500 is hovering over, I believe, 1,300 points, and the NASDAQ is up. All three categories are at 2008 highs. So my question is, if things are so bad and this president has done such a horrible job, then why are we sitting here with those kind of numbers if the guy's so bad?
Well, in large part,
being manipulated again. And if that's the case, my further point of why regulation is needed. And if you don't want to regulate Wall Street, it's a highway to steal for these people.
Yeah.
And that's the point I want to make.
Yeah, and you just made it very well. Thank you. And my take on all this. Go ahead.
Tom, I want to make a reference to JP, who you talked to a few minutes mm-hmm. ago. If JP thinks that regulation is causing a lot of these problems, I would really encourage JP to take a look back at the Bush and Hank Paulson days when Hank Paulson authorized the bailout of AIG.
Right.
The largest, the company that benefited had the largest was the largest recipient of that AIG bailout
was Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs.
Yep. And we bailed out AIG dollar for dollar.
What's that?
And we bailed out AIG dollar for dollar, which was unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it was just to keep
Absolutely.
Goldman Sachs whole.
Yeah, and a lot of people may not know this, but Mr. Hank Paulson was the CEO at Goldman Sachs.
That's right. And
if you think there's something fishy about that, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, Greg, here are my concerns. Number one, you are right. The stock market is hitting historic highs, and it looks like it's probably going to go a little higher. I would say 3 years at the most before there's another crash because we haven't changed the fundamentals. We have no trade policy. In the United States, we're running an 800, well, it varies from year to year, $600 to $900 billion a year trade deficit, which means all this money is leaving the United States. The only way it can come back is for foreign interests to come and buy this country, further hollowing out the core. We have no manufacturing policy in the United States, which is tied to our trade policy. All of our manufacturing, much of our manufacturing has fled the country. We basically don't make anything except weapons. We have an economy that depends on war, on continuous war. That is a really, really dangerous thing. The fundamentals are still screwed up. They're still very, very shaky. And I think that I hope the crash does not happen before November, because if it does, it will be blamed on the president. And in all probability, Mitt Romney would get elected president. He'd come in and say, hey, I'm a businessman. I know how to get through these things. I quack, quack, quack. Which would be a disaster for America, because you've got, you know, the Supreme Court and all his wackadoodle policies and I could give you a long list. I hope that crash does not happen before November. I hope they can hold this thing together. But it's being held together with baling wire and bubble gum. And until we genuinely restructure this economy, it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I'm just saying, be very careful. Don't get deeper in debt unless you absolutely have to. Peter in Bellingham, Washington. Peter, we have a minute till the end of the show. It's all yours. You've got a fusion reactor?
Yeah, so I wanted to let you know that there is a project going on at Lawrence Livermore called National Ignition Facility, which is sort of the state-of-the-art for laser-based containment
mm-hmm.
with 192 laser beams that hold this thing together. It's a huge optical system. You could probably go to Google and type SPIE space NIF. There's some articles and videos. But I saw a talk at this conference called Photonics West where these guys are looking to create energy gain perhaps this year.
Fusion.
Using lasers rather than magnetic, using lasers, 192 lasers at a second.
How do you're saying the pressure of the photons? I mean, it's...
Yes, exactly right.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Peter, thanks for sharing that. I'll go looking for it, and I appreciate the call. That really is truly extraordinary. So anyhow, coming up Monday, I have it here someplace. Maybe I don't. Yeah, we do. George Lakoff is going to be with us, renowned linguistic professor and author of books on why language works and what the Republicans are up to with regard to this. This should be fascinating. And, of course, the news of the day and your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up and get active. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.